everybody, and welcome to this podcast for leaders, managers and owners working in the early years sector. My name is Pamela Steen, and I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Thompson, who has over 30 years experience managing and delivering trainings all over the world. Richard and I have had many conversations about managing individuals and managing teams. And today we look forward to sharing with you a little bit about how motivation matters. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you for having me.
Today we're going to talk about motivation. From your point of view, what does motivating a team mean?
Well, let's start with what motivation means. When we want to do something, you would say that we're motivated to do it. And motivation comes from inside of us rather than outside of us.
Okay.
So you might ask what the leader's role in that, if it's coming from inside of us. As leaders, there are things that we can do to create a climate within which people are motivated, within which the motivation inside of us comes out. If I can use an analogy, a gardener can't make plants grow by telling them they really ought to do that. That's their job. But a gardener can create a climate within which plants can grow and can thrive. It's the leader's job then to create a working climate and to work constantly at maintaining that climate so that team members can grow and can thrive. So that's the leader's job in that. So motivation comes from inside. It's what makes us want to do something. The leader's role is to maintain the climate. The leader's role is to inspire people to want to do things.
Okay. And is it all up to the leader to whether a team is motivated or demotivated?
No, I don't think so. I think the leader has an absolutely key role in that because it's the influence that a leader has. But in the same way that plants in a greenhouse are going to grow, if anything happens outside of the greenhouse, you know, if the climate changes, if somebody's left the door open or there's a cracked glass or something, where something happens to alter the climate, the plants won't grow. So within a team, external factors can influence whether a team is motivated or not. When the leader starts by attempting to motivate the team, and let's assume that they do that, external factors can influence whether the team stays motivated. So the leader's role is to constantly observe and take action in order to keep the team motivated. So it's a kind of joint thing. You know, the team, a lot of people will arrive in a team highly motivated.
Sure.
And if they're highly motivated, the only thing the leader has got to do is keep it that way.
Perfect.
And there's so many influencing factors in there. So
yeah.
I guess we're going to talk about those.
We are. We're going to talk about that climate, that analogy you just made about the greenhouse, which is a good analogy to relate to. So let's look at that climate to help teams be motivated. What do they need to do to create a motivational climate?
I think there's probably four main areas that we could focus on. The first would be goals and objectives. The second would be communication. The mm-hmm. third would be relationships within the team. And the fourth would be recognition.
Great. So we've got four things there that we're going to talk about and relate that to the work in the earlier sector. So let's start with the first one you mentioned there about goals.
Okay. Teams work best and achieve more if they have a goal that is common to all of them, that they're all pulling together to deliver. When I'm working with teams, the first thing I ask when I'm told that a team isn't working well, it's usually when I do get called in, is when teams aren't working well together. The first question I ask them is, what's the team goal? And so they tell me what it is. And the second thing I ask is, well, do the team know that that's the goal? And the leader of that particular team very often will say something like, well, they ought to know it. It's written down somewhere, which doesn't necessarily mean that they either know it or, more importantly, they've bought into it. So a goal is completely, well, it's really, it's necessary, essential, I would say, so that everybody is pulling together. The difference between a group of people and a team is a goal. A group of people might be all working in the same area, but if they don't have a common goal, then they won't be working together to deliver it. So you're the same group of people given a common goal and that they bought into, that same group of people become a team to deliver a goal.
Okay. And in early years, we have lots of opportunities to create goals. We've spoken previously about improvement plans and how we can make sure that within an improvement plan being set for a setting, there's a goal. And we do that every year in early years. We reflect back on the year we've just had and we have our goals for the upcoming year. So that's one area that teams can be involved in creating that goal. We also have our performance reviews, which sometimes happen once a year, sometimes a couple of times, depending on what the setup is for that in each of the settings. And we also have some goals for individual children that may have some additional support needs, and they have a little goal that's maybe been set by the speech and language therapist. So there's some individual goals there. And each of them are really vital in what we do and making sure we've got good quality environments. So that goal setting is valuable. What do you think are the benefits of having those goals?
Well, if I can take a step back for a minute, Pamela, all of the goals that you've mentioned, the types of goals you've mentioned, are all critical. They're absolutely essential. And they would have the same components in them as a team goal. But they're all the ones you mentioned, they're all individual. They're for specific team members or the specific clients, children in your case, there would be goals for each of them. For a team to work like a team, though, the team has to have a single goal that it's pursuing. And those can be short term, they can be medium term. There also needs to be a long term goal that they're striving for. And that long term goal is something that they will almost certainly need to be reminded of on a regular and frequent basis to keep them focused on that.
Sure. And I think what's really nice in when we do fundraising days like Children in Need or Red Nose Day, their goal is maybe to raise a certain amount of money, or they're walking so many miles in a sponsored walk. And I notice when teams are motivated to do that, nobody's off sick that day. Everybody's engaged. They're maybe dressing up because they know what the goal is. And that goal's been communicated to them very well. And that's maybe where we need to sit back and reflect and think about all the other goals that are out with the fundraising day of how we make sure we achieve that.
Yeah, I think it's clear when you have something like a fundraising day, it's very clear to see what the objective is and for people to focus on that. It's not so easy for people to focus on a goal that is maybe 3 months away or 6 months away or a year away or even longer, and to keep people focused on that. So that would indicate that you need to have short-term goals for a day, for a week, for a month. You need to have medium-term goals for 3 months or 6 months, and you need to have a long-term goal, all of which, and within that, you've got individual goals. So individual specific things that individuals have to achieve, that they're striving to achieve. But you also need to have a team goal that the entire team is working towards delivering.
Yeah, and you speak up. You've given a lovely analogy to me before about teams within sports and the goal that they have and how they achieve that.
Yeah, well, team sport, any team in a sports environment, you've got a kind of microcosm of a work team. The difference being that a work team are together for longer, probably, than a sports team, but. If each of the individual players on the field, whether that's rugby, hockey, football, anything, each of the players, if they're working towards delivering their own personal goal, you know, to be the best striker and to be the best goalkeeper, or to get promoted into the first team or something like that, if they're all pursuing their individual goals and there isn't an overall goal, then you've got players all over the park doing their own thing, and which reduces the chances of them ever achieving their team goal. So there has to be a team goal that each of the team members depends on the other team members to deliver. A team goal can't be delivered by an individual. It has to be delivered by the whole team. So the whole team have to have bought into it. The whole team have to understand what it is. And the whole team have to know what each other's role is in delivering it.
Yeah. And that brings us nicely on to that communication about how do we communicate the goals. So let's chat about the importance of communication in relation to motivation.
Well, communication is in everything, absolutely everything. So we're kind of isolating it in a motivation setting. And in this instance, let's talk about goal setting and communication. Communication in a team, in an organization, regardless of the size, is the lifeblood of the organization. It's everywhere. Like our bodies, the flow of blood through our bodies carries oxygen to our brain. And if it doesn't work where the blood is flowing freely and healthily, we get sick. In the same way, a team or an organization, if the communication isn't flowing freely and healthily, there's a very good chance that the team are going to get sick, the organization is going to get sick, and it happens all the time. So communication is critical, and becoming a good communicator is a key role for the leader. It's absolutely vital. So if I was to make the link between communication and goal setting, let's say for the sake of argument, Pamela, that a leader has woken up in the morning and thought, here's a goal for the team that I want to set the team, and fires out an email to them or sends a message to the team saying, this is the goal, and leaves it at that. Well, first of all, you don't have communication. And secondly, you certainly don't have buy-in. So there are methods, there are ways of involving the team in the whole process that are increase the likelihood of the team achieving their goal. And what I would say that has to happen is the team themselves need to be involved, not necessarily in establishing what the goal is, because that is the leader's role. Mm-hmm. Any kind of strategy is the leader's role to come up with it. But having come up with a goal, if the leader then introduces the goal to the team and asks them to challenge and question, first of all, what the goal actually means, to ensure that what the leader understands by the goal and what the team understands by the goal are the same thing, because then you really have more communication. Communication is not sending messages, by the way. Communication is when we have the same understanding, a common understanding of a given thing. That's when we're communicating.
In early years when we're communicating, it can sometimes be a bit tricky because our staff are all on the floor, they're counted in ratio, and often we have to communicate not just goals but information that's really important to make sure our child's needs are met or there's a parent's request comes through. And it's finding that way to communicate. And as you said there's no good to just sending out an email, or we use a platform called Family. There's many different platforms, but the one I'm more familiar with is Family. And we encourage our staff to send messages through that, and we can see that when they've read them. But sometimes what we're not good at is checking they've got an understanding and that buy-in that you talk about. And you were just going on to talk about that further.
Yeah, I think that it happens everywhere that the leader sends out messages, which it's the equivalent of putting a message in a bottle and chucking it into the water or Leith and hoping that somebody reads it and understands it. Without feedback from the person that you've sent the message to, where they indicate their level of understanding, without a bit of to and fro question and answer between two people, you don't necessarily have communication. You do have sending messages, but you don't have to have communication. So in terms of the goal and communicating goals and getting buy-in to those goals, involving the team at an early stage, I don't mean sitting down with the team and spending hours seeking consensus about what the goal is. It's the leader's role to come up with that. The leader comes up with a goal. The leader communicates that goal to their people using whatever medium you decide. But when you use those electronic communication mediums, you still need to get feedback, otherwise you don't have communication. So I mean, I've done things like group chats, you know, where there's been 12 people on the screen and we've had a huge conversation about a team goal and about understanding what it is and about challenging it. So without talking necessarily about the different media and which way you do it, what's important is that the goal is sent out and people have the opportunity and are asked to contribute by saying what they understand by it. And having done that, you can then have another conversation with them about what might prevent them from achieving that. This is really important. This is the goal. Okay, everybody, what do you think might stop us from getting there? And then you've got an open conversation where people are talking about relationships, they're talking about funding, they're talking about resources and everything else. But you then flag up all of those different obstacles to achieving the goal, which requires a bit of bravery on the part of the leader to say, you know, what's wrong with the way we're doing things.
It does.
But having and done that, you get a bit of you get more buy-in by doing that. Pamela, yeah. You're going
to
say.
And it does take a very brave leader to say that in front of your team. You know, you could be standing in front of a team of five, you could be standing in front of a team of 45, and you're maybe giving them a goal or asking them to have an input towards a goal. And all of a sudden you get some of those obstacles given to you. But opening that discussion up is really important, because it's really easy to shut it down and to move on and to ignore. But then doing that, you're not going to motivate that team member. So I think when we're communicating, it might be a staff meeting that we decide, okay, we're going to decide on our improvement plan priorities for the next year. How are we going to get there? You might need everybody to do a little bit of research before they come to the staff meeting. So they're maybe bringing, we have some really good documents we use in early years sector that people can do a bit of research and bring, depending on their learning styles. And we speak a lot about learning styles in our leadership and management training. And it's about how they are preparing for that meeting, how it's been communicated to them that this is what the staff meeting's about, this is what we want you to bring. But as you say, if we don't communicate that in the right way and the right method for them, then people don't come along to those staff meetings. If you're not putting out an agenda, you're not saying what's going to happen, you're not asking for people's opinions in staff meetings, you're not getting that buy-in, therefore your communication's not good, and the team are going to be demotivated. So that buy-in is really important for a goal.
Yes, and let's face it, if you send out all of that information and it's sent out in a very positive way, we want your help, we need your input on this, and some people decide to opt out, well, you know then that those people are not motivated to do that, or perhaps they just simply couldn't for external reasons. But it could be that you've got a problem with motivation right there and then. So it helps you identify that. What is important is to attempt and make a very serious attempt at checking people's understanding of what the goal is and identifying the obstacles that might prevent the team from achieving that goal, and then prioritizing actions that the team can take to remove those obstacles. So the team is already working together to take positive action to achieve the goal that they've all agreed on.
Yeah. And it's so important that as a leader and manager, you're brave in those situations to do that, and don't think you're just going into a meeting to develop goals and walk out the meeting and forget about it. So thank you for that, the importance of that communication that affects the motivation. What about relationships, Rich?
Well, I mean, communication is an art that it's a skill, you know, and leaders have to learn some things about communication. Leaders have to learn, for example, to listen. Listening to people and the act of genuinely listening to people makes them feel wanted, and making the link with what you just said about relationships. If you want to have a good relationship with people, listen to them. You know, if you ignore people, the opposite, if you ignore people, then you're not likely to have a very good relationship with them. And unfortunately, we're taught how to read, we're taught how to write, we're taught how to speak No one ever teaches us how to listen. And it is something you can learn to do. So, moving on to relationships.
And just before we move on there, we do a lot of active listening within our workshops. And it's, you know, it's a workshop on its own. It's just about listening and how we listen to people. And you can find that out on our website at theleadershipwizard.co.uk. Okay, let's talk about relationships. Mm-hmm. We went back and forward there a little bit, so we're going to relationships.
Well, good relationships are formed and develop and are maintained by the behavior of people with one another. If team members treat each other with respect and they're open with each other, relationships are going to be better than if team members gossip behind each other's backs and snipe at each other. So behavior is good, positive behavior is important to developing and maintaining relationships. And this is an area where the leader and the leader's role in maintaining the motivation of the team is vital. And that means observing all the time. The leader is watching and listening all the time. And when the communications break down in terms of the way things are communicated with people, I don't mean stepping in every time you hear somebody say something that's a bit off. But I do mean that establishing a climate within which it's the norm for people to speak to each other with respect, to be open with each other, which is something that we don't always do.
No. And it's really hard when you get a culture of gossip happening in a team.
Yeah.
And if you're in the lovely position of starting a new team, you have to work really hard at not letting that gossip creep in. There are ways you can turn it around and, you know, stop the gossip, but you've got to work very hard at that. So I think when we're thinking about motivation, you're also thinking, have I got a gossip culture? And what can I do to address that? Mm. And I know, Richard, you talk about good gossip as well.
I like good gossip. In a team, good gossip versus bad gossip. Bad gossip is talking in a detrimental way behind people's backs. That's not good. Good gossip, what I mean by that is just chat, just people chatting with each other about unimportant, irrelevant things that help you to get to know each other and having opportunities to do that. If people have the opportunity to sit and have lunch together, to share things, to share experiences, share what they like about music, about movies, about the television, about children, about anything, and just chat. It helps people to get to know each other. And when they get to know each other, they know people's likes and dislikes. They treat people with respect, or they're more likely to.
Yeah.
And one of the things it's a big thing about openness in teams. If there's ever a silence in the team as a whole or with an individual, imagine you're sitting at a table in the lunchroom or the breakout room, and everybody's chatting away about nothing in particular, but just gossiping, chatting about stuff in a very positive and upbeat way. But one person never contributes. And whenever they're sitting there, they just sit quietly and they never contribute. That lack of contribution, that lack of being involved in the gossip, if you like, creates a vacuum into which gets sucked negative thoughts about that person. So the team who were all talking together start to talk about the one person who didn't contribute and started make up rumors and supposition about why the person is not talking. And the relationship between them breaks down immediately. So relationships are helped in many ways just simply by talking, by getting on with each other, by learning about each other and listening.
Yeah. And talking about relationships, when we first met about 24 years ago now, you gave me the lovely story about the whiskey distillery when you were about to do some work. And that story has stuck with me for all teams that I've managed. Could you share that with everybody?
This is the whiskey bottling plant one are we talking about?
That's it, Richard, yeah.
Okay. I was called into this big name company, bottling plant, and I was with the HR manager for the place, and we were talking about what they wanted me to do with the team, because the team wasn't working well together. And as a preliminary to that, we went for a walk around the bottling plant, which is a very noisy place. And what I noticed was that every single person we went past, this HR manager had a word for them. He remembered that somebody was going on holiday the next week. He remembered about someone else's children. They remembered that somebody had been going to the football. It was phenomenal to watch. And it was such a simple thing. He didn't break his stride almost. He just kept it going the whole way around. And we talked together in between talking to other people. And I thought, what a tremendous way of somebody just maintaining relationships with his people. He wasn't in an ivory tower. He wasn't standing back from them. He was just very much part of the team. And that was a boss.
Yeah. And that really did stick with me. And I've managed teams from, you know, a team of five right up to a team of 45. And the importance of getting to know each individual is vital. And I tried so hard to do that throughout my whole time as a manager. And then what happened when I then became a trainer in early years was I was supporting a setting. And I went into the setting and the lady was getting to know me. She was actually doing what I would do with a team. She was finding out a little bit about me. And every time I went into the setting, she would say, you know, how are your children? How are they getting on? She remembered little things about me to ask.
Yeah.
That gave me a huge sense of belonging. And we talk about a sense of belonging in early years lots. We want our children to feel belonged. We want our staff to have a sense of belonging. She developed that relationship with me, which still to this day, when I go in, we still have a conversation. I'll remember bits about her. But what is important is we don't cross what I call the professional boundary, because you can overshare as a leader or manager. And it's important that you're not oversharing, but knowing a little bit about somebody. And I think, you know, when we talk about relationships as well, sometimes you find out things about people that they maybe like, or they've been for a nice meal. And you as a manager, if you're about to, and I know we're going to talk about recognition, but if you're about to thank them for something they've done very well, you might want to give them a little gift. Give them something that you've remembered that they like. And I know I talk about Galaxy chocolate all the time because I love that. If somebody gave me a bar of Galaxy chocolate as a thank you, I'd be over the moon with that because they recognize.
I'll remember that.
Remember it. Write it down,
Richard. Will do. Noted.
Yeah, thanks. It's just about that recognition. And I know we're going to come on to that. But before we do the recognition, we've got to build those relationships. We've got to know about people. We've got to know about what motivates them. And thinking about how we find out about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that the leader can, in terms of maintaining that climate of motivation where people want to be there, they want to be doing the job because it's an enjoyable place to work. The activity itself is enjoyable. The environment that they're working in is enjoyable. Those are highly motivating features. Keeping people informed, keeping the team members informed and up to date avoids that information vacuum that's so negative. Taking an interest in them, as you've said, in their situations, their careers, their hopes, their dreams, you know, that's all going to help. And giving credit where it's due, recognizing a job well done is so important. So I suppose it kind of, the way we're talking about it, it sounds like people are constantly talking. Well, that's a good thing. As long as the talk is upbeat, it's positive, it's, you know, and if there's a problem, that problem is being listened to and addressed properly. So, yeah, I mean, bad relationships in a team break up the team. Good relationships hold them together. It's the glue that holds them together.
Yeah. And as managers and leaders, we want to create times that we can do that, that we can create those moments to build the relationships. Because unfortunately, sometimes now in a staff room where they've all got their podcasts on, hopefully it's one of our podcasts, they're maybe listening to some music and there's no chat, there's less chat. So it's really important that we're creating moments for those relationships building. If it's not happening during breaks, then can it happen during staff meetings or on other occasions as well?
Yeah.
So that brings us nicely on to the next part about recognition.
Recognition is one of those things, but according to, if I can get kind of technical for a minute, one of the motivational theorists that I like best is a guy called Hertzberg. And he, I like it because he identified what factors in a work environment actively demotivate people and what actively motivates people. And yeah, everything does both, but in varying degrees. But there was very few things where the presence of them was more motivating than the absence of them. If I can give an example of that, you would imagine that the environment that people worked in, you know, the state of the paintwork, the state of the building, the toilets, the staff room, and so on, you would imagine that they're important. However, if you put them in place, fantastic restrooms, fantastic toilets, beautiful surroundings, everybody likes them, but it doesn't motivate them. It doesn't say, "Oh, I'm going to work because there's a great toilet." You know, it doesn't. It doesn't motivate them. But the absence of those things is actively demotivating.
Yeah,
you see what I mean. Well, recognition is the other way around. The absence of recognition is demotivating, definitely, but the presence of recognition is by far and away the biggest single thing that motivates people. Being recognized for what you do, being recognized as an individual, being given credit where it's due, being treated and being considered valuable, all of those things are so incredibly powerful. So that, you know, going back to what we were saying about relationships and about knowing about each other and about remembering things about each other, is a recognition in itself.
Yeah.
Giving people interesting work to do that suits their skills and their experience and treats them like an individual and recognizes perhaps that they're developing and improving in something, so they're given a bit more responsibility. That's a huge bit of recognition that is extremely powerful.
Yeah. And that, you know, I had a lovely story. When I interviewed somebody, she was a drama teacher and was moving into the early years. And when we got to the part of interview where we were talking about her experience as a drama teacher, there was a spark there that was just magical. And when she then started with us, she then developed a drama programme for 2 to 3 year olds. Now, she was in her element delivering that with the children. The children enjoyed it. She got recognised from parents, from other staff who were actually learning from her as well. And I was able to say to her, "That was fantastic. Look at how the children engaged with that activity. Look at the learning that was coming from that." I was able then to give really specific feedback and recognise her. And not only was I recognising her, everybody else was as well. Yeah. And in our sector, we have so many opportunities for recognition. Our parents can send in little comments to our staff team to say, you know, "Thank you so much for helping with my little one with toilet training," for example. Or, "Thank you for helping with sleep times." There's always lovely recognition that comes through. And what I like about that recognition that we receive is it's specific. And actually, I fell into the trap of, at one point, not being specific with my recognition. I would be saying to my team at the end of the day, "Thanks for today. That was a great day. Thanks. Have a nice evening." I was like, "Hang on a minute. What am I thanking them for?" So then that made me really think, what am I going to thank that staff member for going out? Because they all do fantastic things during the day. Mm-hmm. To enable me to recognise what I can thank them, I had to move away from my desk. It's easy to get trapped into emails. It's easy to get trapped into monitoring and quality assurance. You could sit at your desk all day long and still have more work to do. You've got to time manage. You've got to break away from that desk. Go observe your staff. Build relationships with them. Recognise them. So at the end of the day, when they leave, you can say to them, "Thanks for managing that handover with that parent tonight. That was fantastic and that was quite a tricky situation." The feedback I get from staff when I give that specific is that really motivates them. They're saying, mm-hmm, "Thanks, Pamela, for recognising that. Nobody's recognised that in me before." So it's mm-hmm, so powerful, the recognition. And we have so many avenues in early years that we can be recognised. We need to make more use of that.
Indeed. And what I've found very clearly is that not just in early years, but in every organization that I've ever worked with, and I've worked across just about, I don't know, almost every organizational type or every kind of industry and business that you could think of, at some time or other I've been in there, the same things motivate people everywhere, in every kind of organization, even across different cultural boundaries and different countries, different people. They're motivated by the same thing. And there isn't a single person that isn't motivated by being recognized for what they do and how they are. So I agree entirely with what you're saying there, Pamela, about the need for specific feedback. And feedback is much more powerful if it is specific. I'm sure managers don't always have the time to give specific feedback to every single individual. But even your more general recognition of, you know, good night, everybody. Thank you very much for working your work today. It's been great. See you tomorrow. Even that is better than what usually happens, which is nothing. You know, like no comment. I got this from a guy that I actually watched do it, and I thought, I've never seen that before. That's incredible. And it was, it just, I was a manager, senior manager, and whenever he was a big open plan office, and when everybody was leaving, because he did tend to leave all at the same time, when everybody was leaving, he went to the door and just said thank you to everybody as he leaves, and he went, good night, have a good evening, you know, thanks for your work, good night, good evening, you know, all that. And I thought, I've never seen anybody do that. You know, normally it's just, oh look, it's 5 o'clock, let's get out of here, you know, it'll disappear. So any of that, making people feel like people, making people feel valued in any way you can, that's the recognition that people need.
Fantastic. So thinking about motivation, we've spoken a lot about goals, recognition, relationships, communication. What are the signs of a team that are motivated? You were walking into an earlier environment. How would you know if the team was motivated?
In the same way that I would recognize that a team was motivated in any environment, that there's an energy, an enthusiasm, a determination about the team. They're active, they're positive, there's a good vibe going on. You know, they're happy at what they're doing. There's cooperation. If you're there for a bit longer and you're observing them a bit longer, when a problem occurs, people cooperate and collaborate in order to solve problems. Team problem solving is a phenomenally powerful thing and really bonds the team together. So in a highly motivated team, you've got energy, enthusiasm, determination, you've got cooperation and team problem solving, and you've got a willingness to take on responsibility. Not shying away from taking on an extra job, actually seeking to do more, to try more, to do things a bit harder, a bit better. Those are the characteristics, some of the characteristics of a well-functioning and motivated team.
Sure. So flipping that on its side, what would you see walking into a team that was demotivated?
Probably much easier to spot. What you get is poor timekeeping, absenteeism, which is one of the things that people don't necessarily put down to motivation. If somebody in your team is persistently late, is off sick a lot. Now, okay, you've got people who are genuinely are ill. However, if you've got a persistently bad timekeeper and somebody who's always got an excuse as to why they can't turn up for work, I found that it's not often attributed to lack of motivation, but that's almost always the cause, the root cause. So in a malfunctioning, demotivated team, you've got people who are absent, who have poor timekeeping. They're apathetic, they're indifferent, they're kind of, you know, can you do this, or shall we do that? You get a shrug of the shoulders and that kind of, yeah, if you want, if you say so. And also another one of these things, which really undermines everything, exaggerating grievances is one of the things that happens in a demotivated team. There's a little niggle somewhere that everybody else might overlook, but somebody stores it up and they blow it up into something much bigger than it really is. And they have a lot of grievances. They might not believe that they're demotivated. They very often will blame everybody else for those things. They are signs that the team is demotivated. So watch for them, listen for them. And if you see that happening, your first port of call should be, how motivated is this person? What is it that they like about the job? What is it they like about the team? What is it they like about the place that they're working? What do they not like about it? Try and identify the root cause. Remove the obstacles if you can. If you can't, maybe you've got the wrong person in the team. Maybe that person has just grown out of the team, or the team has grown out of them.
Yeah. And I think when you think you have that team, remember what we've been discussing tonight about those clear goals, practicing good communication, providing and encouraging the recognition, all contribute to those healthy relationships. And we all want that healthy relationships with that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
You know, our leaders' jobs is to nurture and maintain it, thinking about that greenhouse right at the start of our podcast, Richard. So one thing, after all our discussions, one thing that you're going to say to our leaders, managers and owners that they could do tomorrow in their setting to improve motivation?
Only one thing. If you were only going to do one thing, I would say focus on recognition. Focus on giving feedback to people about what they're doing well. Look for people doing things right, not for people doing things wrong. Recognize them as individuals. Say thank you for a specifically a job well done. It costs nothing except a lung full of breath. So recognition would be the thing that I would focus on. You can do it tomorrow, and as long as you carry on doing it and you do the other things as well, but that's the thing that I would say, start tomorrow.
Brilliant. A great start for anybody's motivational journey with a team. Thank you for sharing that. And it costs nothing apart from your breath. Thank you, Richard. Richard, it's been a pleasure having you on our podcast, All About Motivation Matters. We hope that our listeners will click and subscribe to even more episodes within our Leadership Matters series. Thank you, Richard, for being here today.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.